fresh concerns over health services in Northern Ireland. They risk getting to the point of collapse without a long-term funding strategy to support transformation. That is according to a report by a Westminster committee. Let's speak to the former chief exec of the Health and Social Care Board, John Compton. Good morning to you, John.
Morning, Vinny.
It's pretty stark reading stuff. And I guess one thing we don't want to do is concern people that might be waiting on an operation or concerned about waiting times in A&E departments, etc. What's at the core of this?
I think at the core of this is a debate about money and about how much money the health service in Northern Ireland needs. That's not a new issue. It's been talked about many times. But I think it's reaching something of a crescendo here, and the committee, the Westminster committee, clearly pointed out that without some really radical review of how money and the funding takes place, there are really troublesome times ahead for the health service in Northern Ireland.
And have they outlined exactly where that trouble could be? Is it longer waiting lists? Is it the closure of hospitals, for example?
Well, they have. They have indicated, not without, it was not really rocket science, that some of the areas that are of particular concern are waiting times, cancer waiting times, etc. And you're right that, you know, today as we sit here talking about this, many people are getting fantastic service in the system and waiting to get great service in the system. But I think underneath all of this, there is a really profound challenge about what sort of health service we want and how we're going to pay for it.
The department issued some information to Assembly Health spokespeople in recent days. The BBC got a copy of this. On it, for example, waiting lists, it's estimated that the region of £100 million per year in sustained investment is required to tackle that backlog. That's a lot of money, and that's per year. It's not just one lump.
Well, you see, the waiting lists have got themselves into such a mess that you can't do it for less than that. And in fact, it's not £100 million. It's probably £100 million over 5 or 6 years. So it's a lot of money to get some order and some control back into waiting lists. And why that is so important, really, it starts with patients. So it is now clear that some people are having really much poorer outcomes than they would have had because they're waiting longer. A lot of people are waiting in pain. It's losing confidence in the public in terms of the health service. And whether people like it or not, we have created a two-tier system. It's not for no reason that there hasn't been significant investment in the private sector recently.
In relation to our health trusts and the deficit they have, mm-hmm. it's set at around 20 million.
I think that's the published deficit. I think underneath it all is probably greater than that, because each year the trusts will have what's called non-recurrent money, which will enable them to break even. So,
and when would they have to? Sorry to interrupt you. When would they have that money, you know, to try and rectify that? That's a 20 million deficit at this point. You're saying it's actually probably more.
I think probably in recurrent terms it's more. There's money in the system. They do their accounts on the 31st of March every year. At the 31st of March, is now projecting they'll be 20 million short. But roll that over straight away, because we have this horrible one-year budget thing onto the 1st of April, and there'll be an amount of money in each of the trusts which is non-recurrent. They were able to use it to break even, but it comes back to be a problem next year.
So between now and April, could that mean reduction in services, cuts in certain
trust
areas?
I think that clearly any system has to break even. It can't not break even. 20 million is a modest amount of money. That's the other thing in terms of the scale of the money. You know, 5.5 billion, which is a huge sum, which is spent in 20 million, is really a small amount of money. So that of itself is not going to create major difficulty in terms of service provision. What is going to create major difficulty is the fact that the budget, which is an annual budget, is under enormous pressure for certain systems, and that pressure is growing, and it has grown over the past 2 or 3 years. And that's, I think, what the Health Committee were saying. I think also it's a political document, isn't it, in the sense that it was done by politicians. So what I think they're really saying to local politicians in Northern Ireland is, would you forever come back and do the job you're meant to do? And, you know, I couldn't emphasise enough how important that is. Political leadership about choices, about how much money there is and where it goes.
There's no sign of that happening.
None.
Anytime soon.
None.
And why do you think we're having this conversation again? Because obviously you were overseeing Transforming Your Care, for example. We also had the Bangor report, and yet here we are, 2019, and nothing seems to have changed. In fact, things seem to be just simply getting worse. Is nobody listening?
Well, I think it's really, you see, when you have a publicly funded system, you're entirely dependent on the political system to take decisions about how you publicly fund that system. And when you don't have it, then this is the product that you get. Sometimes people think, well, not having an assembly, what does it matter anyway? Well, this is why it really matters. It really matters because these sorts of decisions need to be taken. Bluntly, from my point of view, if you take waiting lists, there would be no prospect that the waiting lists would be where they are today if we'd had an assembly, because no minister could have survived. And that would have led to different decisions and different choices.
One of those choices, does it come down to hospitals and where we have hospitals? Because then what you have is politicians, for example, very unlikely to vote or support the closure of a hospital in their area. Well, and therefore we have this merry-go-round and that elephant in the room, per se, is never addressed.
Well, I think it's important not to confuse the two things, reform and money pressure. Reform will never take away the money pressure. It needs about 6% a year. In an unreformed system, however, it needs about 9%. So you can do something between 6 and 9 if you reform it and you make change. And there's a lot of change happening, a lot of change that people mightn't necessarily see. So, for example, the investments in primary care has been very positive in making that, you know, better to manage chronic illness. And there are consultations out at the moment in terms of stroke services and breast services and all of that. But as a population, we have to understand that we need to accept change. And not every time that somebody comes along and says change that we resist the change. Because if you do that, then this is what you produce.
Okay, I'm just aware of the time this morning. Longest cancer waiting times in the UK, no cancer strategy. You know, what does that say to someone that is has just recently received a diagnosis or is going through the process of chemo? It's really unnerving.
It is unnerving. That's the right word to describe. It's unnerving. It doesn't mean that people aren't getting treated or being seen and getting skilled and expert help, but it is unnerving when this noise is in the system. And it's unnerving for them and unnerving for their families. And that's why we need a political leadership to take control of this. You know, I hear lots of stuff about politics and was listening previously to your previous section in the middle of all of this. But in the real world, or as a friend of mine used to say, meanwhile back on planet Earth where we all live, what we're concerned about is how our health service is working. And there is a political responsibility here to get into a different place, because if we don't, then we have to simply accept the consequences that that Health Committee report has given.
Just before we hit the news at 10 o'clock, pay, and one thing we've talked about in terms of the pay for people in the health service, and the parity with across the water. So, for example, introducing pay parity with England and Wales would add £103 million to the pay bill this year. Again, the people that are on the front line that we desperately rely on when we need some help and are at our lowest, and we still cannot find the money to give them what they're looking for in terms of a pay rise.
Well, I think, I mean, this is a really, really difficult issue. And it's an issue that started with the local administration taking the decision to break pay parity. And what happens when you run that break of pay parity over a period of years is you end up with the £103 million difficulty. And there is no doubt that the current pay thing needs to be thoroughly looked at. Now, it's not practical to fix that in 1 year, but I think what the trade unions are probably looking for is an agreement that in principle over time they will move to restore pay parity. That's much more achievable.
North West, the call campaigns for quite some time for a medical school at McGee, and the costing for that around £30 million every year. Is that looking very unlikely now? Will that ever happen?
I think there is a need for an increase in medical provision in Northern Ireland, and I think it's a good thing that there'd be a medical school up in Derry. That I think that's really a very positive thing for all sorts of reasons, actually. Who knows? Politics will be the decider.
John Compton, thank you very much for coming in. 03030 80 55 55. What is your reaction to that? Because this is our health service. It affects you and your loved ones directly. How do you feel about those quite concerning, alarming financial issues that John has highlighted there?